right. Well, welcome to a very special edition of the SJHL Weekly. It is April the 29th, 2024. I am Jamie Neugebauer. I'm joined by Rory McGoran. I'll bring him in a second. If you are noticing something different, A, it's a podcast and not the usual SJHL Weekly because Clark was not available, I guess we'll say today. And also, we're just taking a day between games here, trying to catch our breath just a little bit. But it has been a lot of fun. Rory, how are you doing? Enjoying the finals? Do you have gas in the tank? I think it's been like 68 periods in the playoffs for you.
I got a little bit. We're at maybe a quarter tank here, but we're recharging, as you said, today. It's been a blast, and, you know, don't look away. The Flin Flon Bombers are back in it.
Yeah. Don't look away. If anybody looked away, also, I would question their judgment.
That's true.
As well. But good point. Yeah, don't look away, folks. That would be a big mistake. Yeah, 68 periods for Rory since March the 22nd.
Is that the actual count?
That's what I looked up. But as with me and math, things can be wrong. But that's kind of what I looked up. I was like something like 68 periods, which is a very specific number. But you know.
So Tuesday will be over 70, which I guess is, you know, over 20 games. We're nearing on like half of a regular season in a month.
Yeah. Good for you, Roy.
It's been a grind.
Get your recall out. Good for you. You've done a great job. It's been an honor. And I have to say, you know, Nolan and Nick and obviously producer Rusty and the whole elite crew, obviously the crew is next level compared to all of us. So big time kudos and thanks to everybody for how the broadcasts have gone in the Cantera Seeds Cup final. All right, so we'll get to talk about the Cantera Seeds Cup final in a minute. Obviously, if you haven't been following, if you're just tuning in right now, it is 3-2 in favor of the Melfort Mustangs going into Game 6 tomorrow. And it started 3-0 for Melfort, and now it's 3-2. So maybe some history, or maybe it's over tomorrow. We don't know. We'll find out. But quickly, just a quick news and notes segment. Rory has graciously allowed me to have a couple of minutes, maybe 1 minute on my own, and then we'll come back to talk about things in the final. So just a quick Centennial Cup update, what we know about who is in for Oakville. A lot of the leagues are done, in fact. We know the Calgary Canucks are going to be there. They beat Whitecourt in four games despite being the two seed. We almost saw that in this league too, the two seed sweeping the one seed. But the Calgary Canucks got the job done. The Winkler Flyers, Manitoba league team, they also beat Steinbach in four, and they were the lower seed. Zach Nicholas with the overtime winner to send Winkler to the Centennial Cup. Not a bad way to win it, eh? Go in overtime and win it in overtime. That's pretty cool. The SIJHL, the Sioux Lookout team in their second year of existence beat Cam River, which is a team that we all know pretty well, the Cam River Walleye, but Sioux Lookout in their second year of existence are off to the Centennial Cup. The Sudbury Cubs beat the Powas and Voodoos in five for the NOJHL Championship. Neither were actually high seeds at all. So those were that's kind of a big story in Northern Ontario League, which is kind of neat. The number one team in the CJHL rankings, the Collingwood Blues, are up 3-2 on Trenton. Collingwood overtook Flin Flon kind of late in the year. And so Collingwood is, of course, Anthony Bax, the Flin Flon Bombers defenseman's old team. He will be paying attention, I'm sure. So Collingwood is up 3-2 on Trenton. Game 6 is tonight in Trenton. The CCHL Navin is up 3-2 on Smiths Falls. Game 6 goes Monday in Smiths Falls. Former Notre Dame Hound Briggs Jowett is on Navin. So that's kind of neat. Quebec, Longueuil, they were at the Centennial Cup in Estevan. They are coming back to the Centennial Cup as well. They beat Everest Côté du Sud in seven games in the Quebec Championship. Game 7 there in Quebec could happen here. And so Longueuil is back. They were pretty cool. They were really good. And then Miramichi in Maritime League is up 3-1 over Summerside. The Capitals were in Estevan as the Maritime champs a couple years ago. They were really good, but looks like it's Miramichi holding the lead there. All right, we move forward to the Esso Cup. The Regina Rebels have defeated the North York Storm 2-1 in the gold medal game Saturday in Vernon, B.C. Really cool for Saskatchewan to win championships. I mentioned it earlier in the year during the WHL Cup that Manitoba won their first ever and congratulated Rory. So, good for Saskatchewan teams to to win. There you go. And obviously, Stryker Zablocki, the Northeastern commit, played for Canada at the U18 Worlds. Great player for the Regina Rebels. She had six points in seven games for the Regina Rebels. And there you go. And then last thing in news and notes, the commitments. Got to mention Topher Chirico to Wentworth Institute of Technology in Boston, D3. You know, I know a couple SJ guys have gone there recently. That's pretty cool. Hayden Prasovsky, who we haven't seen that much of in the finals, the Melfort Mustangs forward, he's going to SATE. And Parker Layton is going to go pro, the LaRonge Ice Wolves defenseman, the local boy there, to the Columbus River Dragons in the Federal Prospects Hockey League. So straight out of the SJ to pro, that's a pretty big jump. Anything you wanted to comment on there, Rory?
Yeah, just obviously, as you said, congratulations to everyone in the Centennial Cup. Congratulations to the Regina Rebels, and then to those three SJHL players finding their post-secondary homes. You know, always a big moment around the league, and just expect those to keep flowing in throughout the spring months here.
Yeah, I know you're a Manitoba guy. I know you, like, pay hard attention to the SJ. You pay hard attention to the Humboldt Broncos, but kind of neat for Winkler, a bit of a different look. Usually it's kind of Portage or Steinbach out of Manitoba, so somebody different.
Yeah, really cool. Really cool for the Winkler Flyers to head back there. First time in a while for them, too, to pick the MJHL championship.
Yeah, I know. Great for them. Obviously, a bunch of former SJ guys on both teams in that final. Yeah. But obviously, got to shout out my buddy Isaiah Peters, the former Notre Dame Hound, who's a big-time D-pairing man for that Winkler team. So, be fun to see them in Oakville. All right, we move forward. Point number four. I've laid it out 10 points trying to be organized, so here we go. Game 5 thoughts, Rory. Where does it sit in the games that you've called? Obviously, if you don't know, we're talking about a 5-2 win for the Flin Flon Bombers in front of as electric a crowd as I've ever seen in my life. So where does it kind of rank in your career?
Easily top 5. That atmosphere was nuts. You know, yeah. I mean, we've called a couple Game 7s in our time, some overtime action. Easily top 5. Like, the speed of it was amazing. There were stretches of, you know, multiple stretches of 3 minutes, some stretches of like 4 minutes, 5 minutes with no whistles. It was entertaining for everyone, but the fans, you know, in both buildings have really elevated this series with their passion and their atmosphere that they create. And, you know, Flin Flon, that was their best game. Right, hands down, that was their best game. I know we'll break down the X's and O's, but in just terms of, you know, electricity for a broadcast from start to finish, that was top 5 for me.
Yeah, and no question for me there. For me, Game 7s of finals probably have to just edge out anything else.
Yeah.
So obviously, we called Estevan Flin Flon in Game 7 a couple of years ago. I don't think that was a better hockey game, but I think it was. I was more jammed up for it, no question about it. But I was jammed up for both for sure. And I did call Toronto Patriots Kingston Voyageurs in the OJ Finals Game 7 in April of 2015. So that was pretty unreal. That was a blowout, actually. The Patriots blew out the V's. For those who are hardcore OJHL history buffs, of course, I know you are big time, Rory. So
I've done 4 Game 7. So again, like this was an awesome hockey game.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, where in comparison to Game 7 can you really justify it? Obviously, the finals 2 years ago was one of them. Then the Broncos had 2 of them this year against the Weyburn Red Wings and the Melfort Mustangs. And then way back in my first year in the league, it was a Game 7 between Humboldt and Estevan.
Oh, that was actually crazy.
That actually went to overtime as well. So 2 of the Game 7s that I've called have gone to overtime. But I have done 4 of them, yeah.
I think that was at Affinity too, right? Game 7.
Yes.
And I think Affinity Place went absolutely ballistic.
Yeah, it was crazy. And Humboldt was up 3-1 in that series too, and Estevan rolls back and wins it at home. So it was not. Yeah, those 4 are nuts too. But this one's right up there with it. Game 5 was right up there with it. It was awesome.
Yeah, it had all the elements: entertainment value, mix on ice, the on ice caliber of play with the atmosphere, with the meaning, like all those things put together. Certainly that Game 5. For me, that's number 3 overall, you know, in terms of entertaining games. Group stage, Toronto Patriots versus Vernon Vipers of the BCHL in the RBC Cup in 2014. That's number 1. The overtime, that was an overtime loss. Estevan Flin Flon Game 2, or Game 7 there in Estevan. And then this one was Game 3, just because it didn't mean as much, perhaps, just a tiny bit as much as those ones. Though, of course, it was an elimination game, so. There you go. It was number three for me. All right, we move forward then to, you know, breaking down game five just a little bit. The fourth time in five games, Rory, that the Flin Flon Bombers scored the first goal. But so we talked about on our broadcast, I think it was kind of the first time that it was super important that Flin Flon score the first goal just to keep their home crowd fans, you know, with a lot of hope.
Yeah, you kind of broke up a bit at the end there, but I believe you're talking about the first goal scored for the Flin Flon Bombers. Yeah, you know, the fans are electric from the moment the coaches are walking across the ice and they're playing Cautious by Audioslave, right? Like, it's just nuts in there.
Yeah.
For the Flin Flon Bombers, this was their best game. And for, you know, it seemed to be a game that fell into the style of Flin Flon a little bit more than the other ones have so far. You know, I don't think the Melfort Mustangs were bad.
No.
And I mean, I understand that even when they were up 3-1 in game two, Clay Sliva and Trevor Blevins were saying, yeah, we still got to work on a few things. So, I mean, I know they lost the game. You know, in the majority of games where teams lose, they are the team that gets outplayed. I still think they got outplayed, but I don't think they were bad, right? I still think they generated opportunities. Melfort's power play could have got them back in the game. It didn't. That would be the one knock where I was like, if they would have scored a power play goal or two, you know, it could have been 3-3 or 4-3 Melfort heading in towards the third period. But, you know, you look at Flin Flon's five goals, Newsy, right? Riley Niven and Carter Anderson, it is odd man rushes, forcing turnovers and odd man rushes down. They weren't generating enough of that in the first four games. Anthony Piccinino and Alexei Silvestri, that's outwinning the battle in the house, right? They get the puck from Silvestri up top to Luke Leper. He shoots, but Piccinino's in the house, so is Silvestri now after he jams the puck off the net, and Piccinino gets a nice tip. Alexei Silvestri's goal was started up from Jacob Vaakler down low, again, off the side of the net, went in front, and then you have both Silvestri and Vaakler going to the front of the net. Melfort got outnumbered in front of James Venn, and it bounces off Silvestri's leg and in. So these are the things that we addressed in games one and game two and game three that Flin Flon just wasn't doing. Melfort was dominating them in the house. You know, they were getting eyes in front of Laser Hume. Flin Flon wasn't causing turnovers. They weren't getting eyes in front of James Venn. And that's what they did in this game. So I don't think Melfort played bad. I'm sure they want a power play goal. But this was Flin Flon's game. This is what they want to do. And they displayed it the best out of the five games so far in game five.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the power plays there quickly. Neither team are doing well on the power play in this finals. Melfort has three power play goals in five games. Flin Flon has two power play goals. Two of Melfort's three power play goals were in game one when they went 2-for-3. So neither team are breaking into the zone and getting set up and getting, you know, great chances. I would probably argue that Melfort's power play looks better, except maybe in that last game where I felt like Flin Flon had all sorts of shorthanded chances. And obviously you mentioned the momentum that first goal caused. Riley Niven scored on a breakaway, a beautiful play where he batted it out of the air and went down on a breakaway. But that was the third breakaway of the same Melfort power play for Flin Flon. It was nuts.
Yeah. I mean, it was too much, right? And then they continued to create chances. Venn was strong in other regards too. But yeah, if you have three breakaways, or I think one was, you know, 2-on-1, but very close to a breakaway as well.
Yeah.
But on the same power play in a 2-minute stretch, yeah, you know, you got to address and do a little bit of work. But, you know, we talked about Flin Flon's PK and how they were adjusting to it, right? Having that third guy kind of trail the flow into it, which prevents the swing drop back. And then all throughout the game, you saw their centermen really down low and their wingers helping out their defense, which obviously helps in the house and clearing out Melfort bodies, allowing Harmon Laser Hume to see it. I just think they were a lot more consistent to address the defensive side of the zone before they flood out to offense. And that's what was leading to a lot of turnovers. They were always on the right side of the puck, right? And, you know, that's what Flin Flon needs to do. Before, I think they were cheating the game a bit. And it was allowing a lot more offensive zone time for Melfort, a lot more bodies in front of Harmon Laser Hume for Melfort. And Flin Flon, you know, the forwards got to come back and support defense first, then worry about offense. And that seemed to work.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, they got to trust that you play defense and they have enough team speed to get up the ice to make offense happen as opposed to, you know, cheating for it, as you said, trying to stretch too much, too fast. That's 100% it. And on the other side of things, I think Trevor Blevins, you know, as long as we've watched, he has a philosophy about what his power play wants to look like. There's a lot of, you know, three guys moving around at the top and try to confuse the penalty killers, try to get them out of position, try to get them to chase you. And then, you know, they have those two guys down low who they are trying to overload and overwhelm whichever defenseman or whatever penalty killers are in front of the goalie. And, you know, it's been the same Trevor Blevins power play for a long time. If you stay at home and you block shots and you don't move out of your position, if you believe in what you've been taught systems wise, then it can be stopped. And I think the Flin Flon, you know, penalty killers are doing a good job of that. And I think the Melfort penalty killers, as you said, are done a great job adjusting and keeping another forward high and not letting the Bombers get set up in the power play either. So both teams have done a wonderful job systems wise in this series. I think you're absolutely right there, Rory, and that the power play and the penalty kill certainly bears out with that. So my next point is series kind of in two parts, Rory. It seems like there's a way in which we could look at the series, and this first half was all Melfort, and the last bit has been all Flin Flon. Obviously, it's not that simple. As you said, Melfort didn't play bad. Lots of good chances, and we'll talk about the goaltending in a second, but obviously Harmon Laser-Hume has been wonderful for Flin Flon in the second half, if we do want to agree on the two acts narrative so far. But was there a moment to you on which those two parts kind of hinged?
I hate going back. I'll get you to the moment in a second, but I just want to shout out, because I don't know if anyone saw it yet, and I know you guys at the SJHL, you know, you guys who do the video work have clipped it and put it on. How about Aiden Hutchinson's goal? Is it the goal of the series so far?
Yeah. Well, it's the nicest goal in the series for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a highlight reel goal. And just in case anyone's never seen it, you know, if you're watching on, listening on Twitter or whatnot, just keep on scrolling down a bit and go find it and take a look, because it was a beauty.
Well, I'll just say I'm going to post that as because obviously we're not having a conventional SJHL weekly. I have two highlights of the week, so to speak.
That's
one of them. So
okay, nice. The turning point, it has to be game four overtime, right? Mm-hmm. To me, it is when Kylan Olofsson digs the puck off the side of the net and beats James Venn through the five-fold. Without that, you know, we're looking at a sweep. That kept the Flin Flon Bombers alive, and they knew they only needed that one little wiggle room. You come back to Whitney Forum. We knew that was going to be hard. Now they've won at the Whitney Forum, and then you can. I asked you this question last time we actually had a live SJHL weekly. If Flin Flon goes and wins Game 3, do you feel all the pressure's now on Melfort? Now that they've won Game 5, is all the pressure on Melfort to close it out in 6? They don't want to go back to the Whitney Forum for 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I said to Jacob when we were driving home, Jacob Faith, the director of marketing for the league, we were driving home from Flin Flon to Regina, and I said, tomorrow is game 6 for Melfort and for Flin Flon, or game 7 for Melfort and for Flin Flon, and game 7 is also, so we got two game 7s is my point coming up, because it's either Melfort wins tomorrow and it's over, or Flin Flon wins, and then it's a real Herculean task for Melfort to go to Whitney and win game 7 with that atmosphere. Though again, you can never write off this Melfort team, and we'll talk about looking forward, certainly you're right.
Yeah, no, I mean, they've won two games in the Whitney Forum, right? Yep. And up until a minute and a half left in the third period, it was a one goal game and they had five power plays. It easily could have been tied or Melfort up, right? Like, I don't think they were drastically outplayed in game 5.
No.
It was just more of a Flin Flon game.
Yeah, well, that's it. And that's my biggest point, my biggest thought process. Yeah, the shots were 42-33 Flin Flon. I think there was good scoring chances both ways. It was probably pretty even in terms of good scoring chances. But to your point, like, I think Melfort, they got away a little bit from their MO. You know, they don't throw pucks in the middle ever. They throw pucks to space. They use the boards. They use their team speed. They get up and they hit you and they make you make mistakes. And that's what Melfort does. That's what Trevor Blevins' teams have done for a long time. It was the Mustangs who were making the mistakes. And I think more than anybody playing bad at all, for sure. Like, nobody's played bad, really, I don't think, since game 2. It's just that the other one, which had the other team, just a little bit better. And that's made it great hockey. It's been real even. like, nobody's been just, you know, sitting in a zone and cycling, and that's been the game. Like, it's been very even. But I think Melfort's getting a little bit away from themselves, and I do wonder maybe if it's an element of fatigue. That was actually a bit of a question I had. Do you think anybody's tired, or do you think that's too lazy of a narrative right now?
I don't know. If you ask them, they're going to say no, but I don't understand how you can't be, right? Yeah. both teams.
Yeah.
It's been a hard series, and I know Flin Flon walked through the first two opponents, and Melfort Mustangs had the grueling one against Humboldt, but I know the shape of all these guys. They're in incredible shape.
Mm-hmm.
But you're entering game six and game seven of the finals. There's got to be bumps, there's got to be bruises, and there's got to be fatigue. It seems inevitable. But, you know, you ask any of them, they're saying no. They're saying no.
Yeah. And they are. And the thing that Melfort people keep saying when I ask them about that is they're 20s. It's their last kick at the can. You know, they're more just trying to giving 120% more than worrying about being tired. And I think that's fair, but I also think they're humans. And I think that has gotten Melfort just a smidge away from their game because I think they are a little bit more tired than Flin Flon. Now, that doesn't mean they aren't going to win. That doesn't mean I favor Flin Flon or don't think that they're not a good enough team to win. I just think they're human beings and they have to be a little bit more tired just because they've played a little bit more hockey. And that's all I'm saying. So there you go. My turning point also was the winner by Olofsson. And again, I don't think that can be really argued, but I should say, you know, it was 3-0 Flin Flon there in game four. Melfort came back to win it, or to tie it rather, 3-3, and then there was a play where the Bombers or the Mustangs, pardon me, won the faceoff, and there was a one-timer for Chase Freemore through a traffic late in the third period, and Harmon and Nazarhum stuck out of the glove and snagged it out of the air. And I think that was a huge, I kind of felt like a seismic shift a little bit, at least in the confidence of Nazarhum, but in the whole Flin Flon team in that moment, that you know, then anything could have happened in overtime, but that one save for me late in the third period seemed to be pretty big too. But there you go. All right, we got to move forward. Chase Freetmore, you know, whatever happens, what a remarkable playoffs for him. 23 points to this point. We talked about it on the TV broadcast. That's one less than the most in the millennium so far for a defenseman in the playoffs. That was Dustin Nering of Springside, Saskatchewan, the Yorkton Terriers. He had 24 in 2006. That Terriers team lost in the RBC Cup final to the Burnaby Express, the BCHL, in fact. So that's not too bad of an omen, I guess, for the Melfort Mustangs. You know, how impressive has Chase Freeport been to you?
He's been potentially the best player on the ice in the playoffs, right? Definitely the best defenseman. And what you said, the most points in the last 24 years by a defenseman is crazy. But he does it in the games that matter the most, right? It just seems that in Melfort's games where they need to find a way to win, Chase is putting up, you know, a pair of goals and assists, like in game seven against the Humboldt Broncos. You know, comes out in game one and game two where they need to make a statement. They can't let Flin Flon get up and get positive about this series. He scores in both those games, adds an assist in game two, picks up two assists in game three win. So yeah, Freetmore has to be their best player, especially on the blue line. And I think he has been in 95% of their games. It's just been an incredible run. And, you know, I feel that you're going to go into a question about MVP, and I want to get your take on it. So you can talk about Chase Freetmore, and then we'll go into that. And then I'll ask you a question if you think it's fair.
Sure, yeah. I mean, that we're on point six. That was point eight, but we can move it around.
No, we can wait. We can let it marinate.
Well,
we can let it marinate.
We'll let it marinate. Let people at home maybe think about who they want their MVP, who they think their MVP would be, but... but yeah, just quickly, 33 minutes and 12 seconds a game in the finals.
No,
and it's not just 33 minutes and 12 seconds per game in the finals, but in a finals that's been electric, that's been crazy, it's been physical, it's been fast, it's been hard. On top of that, as we mentioned, they had that 7-game series with Humboldt. They had harder than it looked 5-game series against Estevan before that. So what Chase Freetmore does, man, I keep saying on the broadcast, the University of Regina, where Chase is going next year, they got to be licking their chops. You know, I know people are, oh, it's the SJ. There's going to be dub kids there. There's going to be pro kids there. And that's fair. But I just think the maturity and the overall play, and as you were saying, kind of alluding to, Rory, like, he does it within the flow of the game. He doesn't cheat anything. He does it within the flow of the game. Like, he lets it all come to him, and it still comes. Because he's that smart.
And we've seen great, you know, CHL dub players come to the SJ and not do what Chase is doing. And the most impressive thing is he's doing it when the games are at their hardest.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't this is game 14 of the regular season on a Tuesday. It's the finals, and he's doing it. It's the semifinals in game seven, and he's doing it. So, he'll be just fine.
In context to what you're saying, Rory, he didn't have any points there in game five, though. Again, Flin Flon played a great game. So Fair enough. And he still had chances, but he had a 5-game point streak going into game 5 of the finals, stretching back from game 7 of the second round that could have gone either way, and then 4 games in the finals, and he had 11 points in those 5 games.
Crazy.
So to have that many points and to be that dominant in those specific games is remarkable. All right, we move forward. Then we'll get to the MVP, because I wanted to touch on this before we get to the MVP conversation. And it's the goaltending. And James Venn versus Harmon Laserhulme. So here are the numbers in the finals, just quickly. And I don't know if they tell the whole story, but there you have it. James Venn has a .936 save percentage in the finals. And in the wins, in the 3 Melfort wins, he's all .935 plus. Save percentage, and he's had like a 950 something in one of them, and then in the losses down to 902 and 913. Again, hard to blame him, perhaps because some of the quality of the chances that Lynn Flynn were carving out in the last two games there were really, really good quality chances. So again, 913 even is really good. 902, anything above 9 is pretty good. And then Harmon Laserhulme, you know, his total right now is at 886 in the final, but obviously he had a tough, you know, 767 in the first game, and he was plus 935 in the two wins for Flin Flon too. So, who feels better about their goaltending right now?
Oh, that's a crazy question to answer. You know, Harmon, recency, because he did struggle a bit in the first two games, has bounced back in a big way, which has to make the Flin Flon Bombers, now that they picked up two wins, feel really good, and you know, just have some confidence. And I mean, look at in the playoffs, he has a .929 save percentage while having, you know, two of the not greatest games in game 1 and in game 2. But James Venn has played, I think, like 30 straight games now, going back to the regular season. So they know it. I don't think confidence, even though they've lost two games, has ever been lost for the players in front of James Venn. So it just kind of matters on which side of the trajectory you want to come on. Harmon has been gaining at recency with wins, and that's huge for momentum. And we talked about the nesting dolls of momentum happen from game to game, from period to period, goal to goal, and shift to shift, from bigger to smaller. But James Venn has just been there the whole year.
Yeah.
And you know, and through a 7-game series against Humboldt, 5 games all against the Estevan Bruins, and then finished off the regular season playing 13 straight games. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know the answer to the question. I think they both should have confidence because they're both great goaltenders.
Right. You know, no question. Well, interestingly enough, historically speaking, James Venn had a better regular season against Flin Flon than he did against Humboldt. Which is quite a thing to say. It doesn't mean anything right now, but just thought a thing to say that. I think it was a question that was a trick question, I guess, right? Because I think they both kind of feel great about their goaltending, but it's kind of for the first time, really, I think, in the finals. Just honestly speaking, that the Flin Flon Bombers feel as good as the Melfort Mustangs do about their goaltending. So, right, if I were to ask this question, obviously last week or whenever it was before last couple of games, probably have to say Melfort Mustangs hands down. But yeah, I think to me the answer is there's no answer. Both.
I would agree.
Yeah. So and there you go. And it was pretty close to a flawless game 5 for Harmon. Which was good to see. I mean, even if you're the Melfort Mustangs, if you're a real fan, you don't want to win because the other goalie struggled. You want to win because your team deserved to win. And not that the Mustangs don't or haven't, but I think that's sort of what you want. And so Harmon has elevated in the midst of a final. So really good for him. And as you said, James has been remarkable all year long, and he was an MVP candidate for a reason. So there you go. All right, MVP talk then. If Flin Flon wins, their MVP, the MVP should be, and if Melfort wins, the MVP should be.
Well, I just want to pose a question to you first of all.
Sure. Oh, sure. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yep. If the more deserving MVP is on the losing team, are you a proponent of still giving it to him, or are you one that does not like that? That think the MVP should be on the winning team?
Good question. I think it would have to be like a real, real historic.
I mean, is Chase
Wright
what he's doing not historic? Like, if he
it
puts
is
up
historic,
another three
historic.
Or 4 points and ends up at 27,
it's historic. But he's a piece. He's a great piece. He's probably the best piece of a great collective. And the same is true about Flin Flon. So if it was one or two guys that really were the reason, the biggest reason by a mile that they got to where they got and still lost, then that's okay. Like if they didn't have that great of a supporting cast and they still led the group and then came up short, I'd be okay with it. Other than that, it has to be the winner.
He scored, yeah. He scored two goals and assisted on the game tying goal with a minute and 30 seconds left in game 7. If Chase Freetmore's not on the team, Melford Mustangs are not in the finals.
Maybe.
You know, I'm just, if there's one player that can make me, and I mean, I don't want to take any shine from Aiden Hutchinson, who's got 29 points, and Clay Sleva, who's been dominant, and Ryan Duguay, who has overtime winning goals. But yeah, like when you're talking, no one has done this in the last 25 years, that now becomes a part of that conversation, right? Mm-hmm. If he picks up two or three more points in the last two games. But for me, if Melfort wins, it's Chase Freetmore. Amazing series from a lot of other guys, but just based off of what he's done, I think it's his. And look, yeah, it's hard not to say Justin Lees, but when you look at the impact of Jacob Vaucler being out of the lineup to when Jacob Vaucler being in the lineup, you know, he got hurt in game 1. They lost. Didn't play in game 2 or game 3. They lost. They lost. Came back in game 4. They won. Came back in game 5. They won. And he has 5 points. He had 2 points in game 4 and 3 assists in game 5.
Mm-hmm.
Vaucler is a sneaky pick if Flin Flon comes back and wins this. But the hometown guy, Justin Lees, with 13 goals and 13 playoff games, he'd be the 1A option, I think, right now. But it'd be tough. You know, you look at what Vaucler does, and we didn't really talk about that in the Game 5 recap, and I thought we missed it. So he's pretty special, and he does a lot to that team when he's in the lineup, and they're missing a lot when he's out.
Yeah. I'm with you. Like, I think there's a sort of a narrative-driven way in which sometimes MVPs can be picked, and what I mean by that is, and Justin Lee certainly would be a candidate if Flin Flon wins it to take it, being the hometown boy, the hometown captain, come back and win a championship for the Bombers for the first time since 93, and that whole story. And again, incredible player, having incredible season, made a huge impact. He had points in all but two games in the whole playoffs so far. Though Jacob Vaucler's had points in all but one game that he's played in the finals, so there's that. But I just, right now, like the way that Jacob Vaucler came back, it's almost like the Bombers were missing their starting quarterback in a football, and they got their starting quarterback back just because the way he passes the puck to everybody. Like, he just spreads that ball around, if you were to use a football reference. So, you know, obviously we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't know what's going to happen Friday. But if it does go to 7 and, you know, Vaucler keeps playing like he is, my vote would be Vaucler for Flin Flon. Even though I think, you know, in that situation, probably still Justin Lees would win it. But again, it's a situation where there's people making decisions and it's not all up to me, which is, you know, the way the world works, Rory.
Probably a good thing.
I don't know if you knew that. Probably a good thing. And then, yeah, I mean, if Melfort wins, to me, there's no question that it's Freetmore. As good as James Venn has been, and if James Venn won it and Melfort won it, I would also be fine because you give it to a great goalie who had a great year and is, you know, he's only an 0-4, so he theoretically could come back next year, which is a scary proposition.
Yeah, and all this is neither here or there. Like, if it goes to game 7 and Justin Lee scores the game-tying goal and game-winning goal, you're giving him the MVP.
Yeah.
No matter if Jacob Vaucler had 6 points in the last two games, if Lee's comes in and gets the game-winning goal, the hometown guy, he's getting it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it really depends what happens in the last two games, but right now it's fun to talk about.
It's fun to talk about, and yeah, like, I just projecting where Jacob Vaucler has been to where he could go, and so that's where what we're saying.
He has a higher point per game total, 1.38 for Lees, 1.45 for Vaucler. He just played 2 less games.
Yeah, and like, there's the element of redemption for Vaucler. Obviously, he was part of that centennial team 3 years ago, and, you know, he's been here for all those disappointments the last 2 years, so. Lots of good candidates and lots of good reasons. And so, we can't write the story until it's written, but there you go. All right. We got 2 more questions then, 2 more points. Before we look ahead to tomorrow in game 6, we with the crew of people that broadcast it, everybody are in the league office and whatnot. We have a lot of fun whenever we get together. We love each other. So we get on each other's nerves, but we love each other too. So we have a lot of fun. So we can't share that much, obviously. But I guess if there was one off-ice moment, not game-related maybe moment so far of this journey of the finals that has been your favorite, what's one maybe that sticks out to you, Rory?
I'll tell you what it wasn't was. Okay. What it wasn't was driving to Flin Flon for game one.
Yeah.
Obviously, the roads were horrid. I actually ended up in the ditch at one point, not too far out of Smeaton. But it does lead my way into what is, and that's because a nice Samaritan driving behind in a truck happened to have a cable or a tow rope and pulled my car up, and then it was a slow drive, and we did make it to Flin Flon for game one. But yes, it's just the people, right? Like, you get to Flin Flon, you see Larry, you see Sal, you see Rob, you see everyone down there, and then you get to Melfort, and you see Tony, you see Keith, everyone's great in both buildings, and the amount of people that have come up to us saying that they appreciate just the coverage that we do all year, and the broadcast with Sastel and Bamboo Shoots and how well they're doing, that's always the cool part, because it's sometimes you got to kind of look back and take a second that we get to do this job and that we get paid to do this job.
Yeah.
And, just kind of giving the best coverage to the players and to the people in this league for the families, and then to hear them say how much they appreciate it, that's what's special to me.
Yeah, that's a great answer. So special, so unique. Awesome to meet, just been in touch with Ryan Duguay's dad a lot of the series, and to hear from like all the different parents, whether it's social media, whether it's in the rink, see them come up to you. Anthony Piccinino's dad was Rocco was telling us how everybody in West Toronto, where he's kind of from, they're all locked in on the SJHL finals.
And
that was really cool to hear, and yeah, that's really fun.
I think he even invited you there, didn't he?
He did. Yeah, he said when you're in town, like let's go for dinner or whatever. So that would be fun. Yeah, he obviously Piccinino and me have that North York connection too. So we knew a lot of some familiar people from my past too, so that was pretty cool. And that happens around the hockey world all over the place. I think that's really cool. For me, a couple quick ones. I love the Korean food at the Copper Kettle at the Prospector in Creighton. And so I got my Korean food, so I was really happy about that. And I told Mike Reagan, you get to game five. Thank goodness you got to game five, not because I'm cheering for Flin Flon at all. It would have been fine if Melfort had won in four, because that's my job. But I was happy that I had another opportunity to go to that Korean food and get the Japchae, so that was really good. And then I did have a big poker win, so don't talk about that too much, but I was really happy about my poker win. All right.
Yeah, that's your second one.
Second one, yep. And though you weren't there.
I wasn't there for both of your wins. I think that's the reason.
you really weren't? Okay. I mean, I was close. I was close in Battleford's, and then you intervened on Jeremy's behalf in a kosher way, we'll say, but it did turn the tide, I think. And it was like 2 a.m. probably at that point. But anyways, that people don't care about that out there. Game six, look ahead then. Last point, Rory. Man, I hate to like predict what's going to happen, but I know you're looking forward to it. I know I am. But what are specific things that you're looking forward to?
Newsy, it's already sold out. Have you seen that?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, it was sold out yesterday.
Yeah.
It was sold out yesterday morning. We're recording Monday early afternoon. It was sold out early Sunday.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Like the game was Saturday, and in less than, 16 hours, it sold out.
Yeah.
Like that. No, that's what I'm looking forward to. Yeah. It's game six. Yeah, if Melfort would have swept them, it would have been a fantastic finals, and everyone treated us so well. But it's extended now to five. It's extended to six. So it's building into an animal of a series, and I can't wait for game six. That's all it is. Games are sold out 2 days before the actual game. It's crazy. So I'm just so excited for it. I'm not making a prediction. I have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I'm expecting game five, to now look like game 20 in the regular season, because that's what game six is going to make it look like. It's going to be nuts.
Yeah. No question. Matt Egan will be back too for Flin Flon. His suspension is done.
Yep.
That'll be interesting to see, whether he slots in given the way the Bombers have played. all that kind of thing. And yeah, it's but there's been a little bit of nasty in the series too. It's been emotional. It's been intense. There's been suspensions. There's been injuries. There's been the storylines have been long. So I'm just more storylines. Hopefully all positive ones. More drama. I'm sure it's been dramatic every game. Really intense and just good hockey. I think that's the biggest thing. Is it's been a great advertisement for the SJHL. It's some of the best hockey that you can see anywhere. Just entertainment wise, these two teams have given us the final we wanted. And so I'm just so happy for that. And yes, as you said, Rory, the atmosphere should be great. Love you, bud. I'll see you tomorrow. I'll give you any last thoughts that you want to say to the people out there before we should close this out.
That's it. That's it. You too, pal. And let's go get it. Let's go get game 6.